be Spectre Call, there'll be Fantasy, there'll be Daring Do, and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, Lecta!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie starring everybody and me. There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that is for us to happily.
Hey, Lecta!
We can watch it on the Vella
starring everybody!
And Halle Berry again. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hey and Actor with the Brothers Wilson. It's the film podcast that looks at the films of an actor three at a turn, and usually that'll do, Pig. That'll
Aye.
Do. But it's the year of Redux, Pandy.
The year of Redux. Having another go. Yes.
Yes, indeed. And unlike the first entrant of the year of Redux, which was Will Smith, we don't think we did a terribly bad job with this subject, but...
No, it was fine. I remember there's some goat penguins.
Yes, all that stuff. subject being Halle Berry.
Yeah, that's her. Everyone's favourite Bond girl.
Really?
Yeah, even the Queen loved it when she ate fruit having sex with Pierce Brosnan.
Well...
When you're gone.
Oh, what a month to take back the editing reins. But, so we will be covering three films of Halle Berry in just a tick. And again, because it's the year of Redux, all bets are off.
Hurrah.
I mean, apart from the fact we're not doing the ones we did originally, first time around. But what do you remember about first time around, brother?
I mean, I'll be honest, not much.
There's a good reason for that.
Yeah, I'd just become a dad.
Yes.
And, I remember we did Dark Tide.
We did do Dark Tide, yes.
Laughably bad.
Yes.
Including the goat penguins. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much all I remember.
Yes. It is fair to say you were quite sleep deprived.
Yes.
And you wanted it known that you loved your newborn daughter. Best thing you've ever done. Your words and such like, but at the same time you wanted a timestamp in history to remind your older self that it is shit being sleep deprived.
Yeah, I stand by that, and that plays into what we did last weekend, brother.
What's that, brother?
Which was go on holiday. We met up in the fair city of Edinburgh.
We did, yes.
We decided to, me and my family decided to take advantage of the cheapness of early flights, which meant that we had to get up ridiculously early, stress about getting to a gate, and then spend the rest of the day really, really tired whilst being tourists.
Yes.
And I remember distinctly getting on a bus at 11:30 and going, how is it still the morning? sleep deprivation is a bitch. I warn all my new friends, friends who are going to be parents soon, that, you know, they don't get you ready for that. But, hey, it's worth it. And just in 8.5 years' time, they can be jumping around all over the living room, doing gymnastics and recording themselves like their favorite YouTubers.
Right. Okay.
Anna McNulty has a lot to answer to.
Now, are your kids Gen Z or Gen Alpha?
I don't know and I don't care.
Okay, that's...
They're my children.
Yes. A bit more about Edinburgh, because I don't know what you're talking about sleep deprivation. I was fine.
Fuck you.
Yeah. because it was Edinburgh, and for you international people listening, Edinburgh is relatively close to Newcastle. Newcastle is the kind of most northern major city in England, and Edinburgh is very southeastern. It gets referred to as the most English city of Scotland.
That's probably why it's so nice.
Mainly as a derivative by Glaswegians, but they've got their own problems. And so I went up on the train and stayed overnight and went back on the train of an evening. And it's all worked out very well.
Yeah, I'm glad. I might be able to answer your earlier question about Gen Z or Gen App or whatever. That every time we talked about going to Edinburgh, Link started shortening it to Edinburgh, like the bastardization of brother to bro to bruh to Edinburgh. Mm. Again, YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, that's why our podcasting duo name, brother, is the Edinburgh Wilsons. So,
yes. Mm. That worked so much better in your head, didn't it?
It did. Now, amongst the things that we did together, brother, when we were in Edinburgh, is we went on a lot of open-top tourist buses.
Indeed we did.
We did. To the extent that on the second day, your beloved son, when learning that we'd be going back on the tourist bus, he went, "Yay, tourist bus!"
He loved it. I think he just liked being on a bus. He doesn't go on them very often. Because we own cars.
Well, there is that.
There is that. So he had a lovely time sitting at the top. Evie loved it too, but mainly because he got to plug in the old style headphones.
Yes.
Digital headphones, analog headphones rather. So has been bugging me for some kind of MP3 device that she can just plug into and have in her ears.
Oh, right.
I've not found one yet.
Okay.
I know I've got one somewhere because I am a hoarder of old electronics.
You and me both. And yeah. One of the things that we were quite amused by when we were on the tourist buses, is, particularly the one on the Sunday, was how open it was to blatant advertising.
Yes.
Like, literally, we went past, like, one bus that was due for the airport, and all of a sudden, an advert for bus services for the airport came on.
Yeah. And same voice. Yeah. Same guy, just telling us about, you know, Scott, the first person to write kind of historical literature.
Yep,
and
yep.
Edinburgh Airport is home to all sorts of, well, it really is the gateway to Scotland International. Why not go to their website and have a look for flights? Jesus.
Yeah. On the buy news, tickets. Mon. Sorry, that's Jamaica.
You forgot the hoots.
Yeah, yes. And all right, Evie. Now, am I right or am I not right? Because I wasn't here to directly witness this, but your daughter practicing her Scottish accents.
Yep.
On public transport surrounded by Scottish people.
I turned to my wife at one point and said, "We're going to get shanked." But, you know, thankfully we are alive.
In fairness, Evie is an adorable 8-year-old girl, so she can get away with it a bit more than, you know, I could. For example.
I mean, if I was on the train going, "See you, Jimmy," in a Tam O'Shanter.
Yes. You'd be in trouble.
I'd be in trouble. But her going, "I'm just practicing my Scottish." Like the little girl from Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
Right, yes. Olivia.
Daddy!
That's the one. Yeah. Anyway, so back to the advertising.
Yes.
And the fact
you're leading up to something, aren't you?
Well, the thing is, brother, I don't know if you're aware of it. We've had a good run.
We have.
Of 10 years of podcasting without adverts.
Yes.
You know, because this is an amateur production. It's a hobby of ours.
I guess so.
I mean, the hosting costs money, but we don't do that.
We do through Patreon, but still.
We do. That is fair.
And if you'd like to become a Patreon of Earth2.net.
But the thing is, you know, times are tough. And, you know, I wanted Hey and Actor to go without advertising as much as possible, it's just no longer feasible.
Has it happened?
So it's just, you know, it's just... So I just want to forewarn the listeners that there might be adverts in this episode going forward. But, you know, we'll ease them in gently. Don't worry about it.
Fine. Yeah. It certainly wouldn't be a blatant advertisement.
Absolutely not. No, I've studied other podcasters and how they do it, and I think I'm ready.
So, excellent.
It should be good. Right then, so without further ado, we have three Halle Berry movies to discuss in this podcast. And again, we're going to do them in chronological order. So the most recent Halle Berry episode we're covering, we'll save towards the end of the podcast.
You mean film rather than episode?
Yes, yes I do. And that particular film is a film that is close to Pandy's heart, and that is Cloud Atlas.
You really are speaking the true truths.
Indeed I am. Indeed I am. And before that, a film not entirely endeared to me, but we'll get to that later. And that is Halle Berry's star turn in a comic book movie of sorts.
The beginning of a franchise proper.
Yeah, more on that later. And that is Catwoman. But we're going to start off with one of the early films in Halle Berry's career. And that is a film that stars Eddie Murphy and is called, if we're getting on to offensive national stereotypes, Stroof, mate! It's only Ruddy Boomerang.
Strike a light.
Music. I haven't been out with anybody in about 2 years.
And you're alone as much as I am.
See,
Marcus! Marcus, you know you wrong. You no good.
Oh, let's go in the living room.
Girlfriend! Hey! Hey! Oh, oh, oh,
you. I am Mr. Romance when I meet a woman, and then once I hit it, I lose interest, but that ain't my fault.
When I decided to take over this company, I considered you a prime asset.
I don't have any panties on.
You're interested in her, right? I mean, look at her. She's fantastic.
I don't date men. I work with.
How long do you think it's going to take you to bone that new executrix?
It's professional, totally professional.
What you saying, man? It's going to take a week?
Call me.
I don't believe this whole thing is happening to me.
Are you okay? Just concerned.
All up in my business.
Do I look like the kind of girl that would be prying?
Good morning, Marcus Graham.
Where's your pride? Where's your dignity? You think Malcolm X died so you could walk around looking like a chump?
Sad, man.
Boomerang is a 1992 American romantic comedy starring Eddie Murphy, Halle Berry, Robin Givens, David Alan Grier, Martin Lawrence, Mayday, Baron Samedi, and Catwoman.
Hey!
Not to mention Donovan Morgan Grant's grandma!
Yeah!
I didn't spot her.
Neither did I. And I looked a few times.
Yes, hopefully Donovan can write in and narrow it down some more.
I mean, he mentioned something about a staircase. So
yes.
It may be one of the women at the beginning of the film.
Or maybe partway through.
I don't know.
The film concerns Marcus Graham, as played by Eddie Murphy, who is an advertising executive whose firm is in the middle of being acquired by a cosmetics mogul, and it means that he is working directly under a woman he finds absolutely insatiable. And as a proven womanizer, it should be fine, just another conquest. Right, well, wrong. Because this woman has him in the palm of her hand. And this very much affects his confidence and his ability to do his job. Because back when he was a normal womanizing chauvinist, he was on top of the world, but not really learning anything about himself. And that may or may not be where Halle Berry comes in.
Whoa.
The people who've previously been in Bond films, Halle Berry not included, are very, very wacky. So we'll go into that a bit more. But
This pussy.
For me, brother.
Yes.
This is the first time I've seen Boomerang.
Uh-huh.
What about yourself?
I watch this every week. No, it's the first time I've ever seen it. I'd never really heard of it until it was suggested for the podcast.
Yes.
Because, you know, Eddie Murphy, at this point in his career, is very prolific. Quite the large star. So I had a lot of films around this time. And it was kind of, for me, lost within some of the bigger names like, you know, Trading Places and Beverly Hills Cop and Nutty yes. Professor and stuff. So yeah, had never heard of it, had never watched it, and now I have. And, okay, I'll be the one to start, and I'll say that I didn't really enjoy it too much.
Ah, interesting.
What I will do is I'll give the film its plaudits, and its credits, because it's telling the story of kind of reverse playboyism or, chauvinism. In early 90s New York. It's got a lot of things going well for it in terms of trying to portray a message. I think the character of Marcus is that right side of funny but flawed, and Eddie Murphy does a good job. He's quite muted when you compare it against the Prince character he played in Coming to America.
Right.
It's kind of like that, which is a bit more of a problem because, you know, in the other film, he's got the excuse that all these ways are alien to him, whereas in this film, he's just a little bit kind of standing there looking gormless when things don't go his way. So, yeah, I think there are some very funny moments and some amazing lines, some amazing female performances. I could say acting performances, but they are really kind of pushing on kind of femininity in this film because it's showing a chauvinist what it's like to be played upon or to be kind of eye candy. And
if anything, I think they underplay it slightly.
To what extent?
To the extent that I don't think he realises that what's happening to him is a mirror image of what he has done to his previous conquests.
No, and that is one of my problems with the film.
Yes, I'd agree with that.
As in, he just kind of derps around and kind of goes, hang on a minute, this isn't how it usually goes. You know, when he wakes up and there's $200 on the nightstand or whatever. And the fate of the character at the end is almost too good, where he's... It rankles with me, the ending. Because right. And spoilers. You've got Halle Berry's character ultimately taking him back mere days, weeks, I don't know, within the minutes of the film, taking him back having had an extramarital affair. Not marital, but betraying his trust and going back to somebody who broke him after she helped him out of his funk. It just rings hollow that, and then, oh, I love you, and back together at the end. He doesn't learn much, apart from he's kind of found his soulmate or somebody he really loves. But has he really learned his lesson? There is one scene where he's like, where she's like, oh, if you really love her, what are you doing here with me? Huh. That's the point, and off he goes. Yeah. Is that the extent of it? Ech.
I think the ending is badly paced. Because okay. I think he does, but I think they rush towards the ending. Like, they should have taken a lot more time building up that relationship and the betrayal. I think they leave it far too late in the film to do... Because usually that kind of aspect of the film would be midway through act two.
Yeah, although I always hate that bit in a film, though.
Well, no, I understand, but that is the formula.
Yes.
Romantic comedy.
Yeah, especially in the early 90s.
Yes. I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
Okay.
I would say, I definitely agree with, there is criticisms to be had with regards to the ending, based upon what I just said. But I also think that whilst it's not actually that unusual to see a film where a successful playboy meets his match and that's the source of humour, I'm sure we've covered films like that on Hey and Actor before.
Yeah.
I mean, arguably, you could say Hitch was like that as well. And we all know how much you enjoyed Hitch. But What I would say is that it's a great showcase for the cast, and it's not something that they scream out at you, but it is basically an entirely African-American cast.
It is, and that, yeah.
The only white people are kind of extras.
Yeah, like the shopping merchants or...
Yeah, the racist tailor.
Yes,
guy.
Yeah, quite.
And such like.
Yeah, and I like how it's not a thing at all. No one says, and we built this up, this company up with just black people. It was just,
yeah, exactly.
He's just walking through his office and everybody around him is an African-American. And
exactly.
That's just a thing.
Now, obviously, in 1992,
yeah.
people scoffed at that.
Oh, did they?
Well, I say people, I mean film reviewers. Yeah. It's like, oh, this alternative universe where there are successful black companies.
Yeah.
Which is hella racist.
Yeah.
Not to undermine my point by calling it hella racist.
I know, but right? What to paraphrase John Lennon, what a bunch of c***s.
As he famously said in that bed. But, you know, I mean, the opening scene, you just see Murphy walking through his office building, just greeting everyone throughout. You've got his best mates in Martin Lawrence and David Alan Grier. And I think you get Chris Rock as the mailroom guy.
Yeah, a fresh-faced, unslapped Chris Rock.
Yes, this is Chris Rock during the time he was on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, okay.
So this would be pretty early in his career, certainly in his film career.
Yeah.
And that's kind of reflected in how big his part is.
Right, yeah. He's got like three scenes.
Well, it's not a cameo either.
No.
But, you know, it's not a huge role. And ultimately, he's there to have a meeting with Jeffrey Holder, better known as Baron Samedi, who plays an incredibly pervy...
Quite camp as well.
Oh, very camp.
Yeah.
Which is why the scenes with him and Grace Jones interacting are amazing.
It took me right back to that episode of Furious Only we did with the dam.
Yes.
It's a beautiful day.
your first appearance on Furious
Was that my Only? First one?
It was, yes.
Nice.
And, I mean, Grace Jones is a riot in this film.
Isn't she?
Yeah.
She's like full on, I don't know if like you can call her a parody of herself, but she's kind of, she's out there, she's outlandish.
She was written to be a parody of herself.
Oh, okay.
And she was fully game for it.
Absolutely. Like they're on a chariot pulled by hunky guys.
Yeah.
Taking off her pants and putting it in a scientist's face.
Yeah.
Outwardly showing her vagina in a public place.
That advert where she gives birth to a bottle of perfume.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of many other people who would do a role like that.
Exactly.
I'm going to be batshit insane. And have a French accent as well.
Yeah, the character's French.
Yeah. Madame
Helen Stranger.
Hélène Stranger. And that list of, I forget it now, but the list of potential perfume names.
Oh, God, yes.
After birth.
And Jeffrey Holder loves all of them.
There he is, clapping away.
Yeah, oh dearie me. And in a similar vein, you've got Eartha Kitt as well, as the perverted, slightly demented figurehead of this cosmetics brand who are buying up Marcus's company.
Yeah.
And she... I mean, it's a lot more muted, but at the same time, it's the comedy of discomfort.
Marcus, I'm not wearing any panties.
And also, you've got her butler, who just smirks as he leaves, and it always causes Marcus to turn his head, going, what the fuck is with that? And interesting, a little bit of trivia, that guy wasn't an actor.
No.
The guy who was going to play that role had to pull out for whatever reason.
Right.
And the director roped in his mate, who actually covered, like, local New York politics for, like, a paper. So that was the first of two acting roles he had in his life.
Oh,
so
what was the other one?
I can't remember.
Oh.
It wasn't a big role. But
okay, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, as to the central conceit about the battle of wills between Eddie Murphy and Robin Givens. Uh-huh. And she was a very interesting Wikipedia search, I must say.
Oh, really?
Well, she was the ex-wife of Mike Tyson.
Yes, no, I read about this.
And yes.
They were worried that, because she was kind of negatively viewed because of the ending of her relationship.
Yeah,
played into that for effect.
Yeah, she was the Heather Mills of her day.
Yeah. And I think that kind of plays well into the character, that it's someone that you kind of want to be against because, you know, they're sort of an antagonist figure.
The thing is, I don't think she's that antagonistic until the very end, which, again, plays into the problem with how the film kind of concludes. So I don't necessarily think she's a villain. I just think it's kind of refreshing to see how she's able to rebuff the overt, flirty sleaze of Marcus. But to begin with,
I think,
and
yes,
then takes control of the power dynamic.
It does, but I think they play her as an antagonist for being like that with him. Because I think what should be happening, if you were to remake this with Andrew Garfield, ha ha ha, that joke will never die.
It's still relevant.
Yeah, clearly. what should happen is, you know, that he kind of realizes, hang on a minute, this is how I've been treating women all my life. Oh no, I've changed my ways. What actually happens is that she does it, as in she kind of pimps him out and kind of talks about him in the same way that guys talk about girls, in a way that's acceptable in the 90s. But when she does it, it's like, and hang on, it's now a woman doing it. Disgraceful. Mm. And it's kind of played as a dick move on her part that she's doing it. There is one character who is saying to Eddie Murphy's character, this is what you do. But it still kind of rings hollow when it's like a warning message to him.
They should make a lot more of it than they do.
They should. As in, she's technically doing nothing wrong. Because, you know, she's got the power dynamic and she is ultimately his boss and he's a willing adult and participant in this relationship. He's in over his head, absolutely. But because she has the audacity to have a vagina, how dare she control this thing? Mm. And it's trying to make it a comedy thing about, Eddie Murphy's acting like a woman, or being treated like a woman. Yeah. Isn't that funny? Because that doesn't happen, does it? Well, now, get back to the kitchen.
Depends if you're asking Martin Lawrence or David Alan Grier.
Yeah.
Who very much play the angel and devil on his shoulder.
Yeah.
In reverse order.
Mm.
Because you have the juxtaposition of the date that Marcus and Jacqueline have and the date that Gerard and Angela have.
Yeah.
Which, the latter one is very chaste. And then the other one, Marcus would love to be fiery and Jacqueline knows how to shut him down at every turn. Like, what's especially funny is how she wants to watch basketball.
Yeah.
rather than get into any macking.
So at that point, I kind of thought, you know, this could be interesting that it's clear that these two characters are sort of dating the opposite people. I forget the character's name, Gerard?
Yes.
But what Gerard needs is kind of a strong person to be his partner. And what Eddie Murphy needs is somebody who's quite happy to kind of have a sort of heteronormal relationship. So I thought that was where they might be going towards. But
They half do.
But apart from Gerard, Gerard anywhere near.
Gerard gets nothing. But
I thought that could be, you know, an interesting dynamic. But no.
I mean, they explore it a little bit towards the end because of how Gerard reacts to Marcus.
Yeah,
and everything that Marcus predicts, everything Gerard predicts coming true.
Yep. And Martin Lawrence's character being completely ineffectual in a way of, no, let's just be friends. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, all three of them are very talented stand-up comedians. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of improvisation and them riffing off one another.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it ends with the lovely hug with the Empire State Building lighting up.
Yeah, it's a nice shot.
It is. What was interesting is it would have cost them like $30,000 to have done it for the film proper. So they filmed it in reverse, just waiting for it to go off. which is quite fun.
I'll have to look back at that scene.
Yeah. So we haven't really focused on her directly. Halle Berry plays Angela.
Yeah.
Who is the kind of girl who comes to Marcus's aid, not so much against Jacqueline, because Angela is her kind of direct underling for the most part of the film, and it's not an antagonistic relationship between the two. But moreover, it's just her as the kind of earthy girl next door type who's good with kids and very into art and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did you feel about seeing her in this early role?
It was interesting to see her play this kind of role when we've seen her do a lot more in a lot of other films. And
yeah.
She does well in this film, but her role is the very typical kind of, I'm going to say ugly character, but she's obviously not, but they're kind of, they're not making her the hot one, the sexualized one. They're kind of dressing her in interesting, wacky outfits and hats and stuff and being all chaste and whatever, whereas Jacqueline's there in lingerie and stuff. So that they're trying to make her the kind of character where, actually, it was you who I loved all along.
Yeah, and I mean, they haven't gone full she's all that.
No.
Where,
no, you
know, she's a dowdy person wearing glasses, but when she takes them off.
Wow, she was attractive all along.
No, but they clearly, you can't do that to Halle Berry, because she's just a very naturally beautiful woman.
But they're sort of trying, though, with the wardrobe choices and the muted makeup, even at the charity ball at the beginning. No, it's not the charity ball, the launch of, yes. Grace Jones. You know, you kind of see her next to Jacqueline, and there's a huge disparity between this is the hot one and this is Angela.
Yeah, I mean, they do specifically downplay Angela's hotness, but at the same time, they don't make her dowdy.
No, that's fair.
So it's clear that Angela is... I wish I could have phrased it better, but more of a kind of alternative to Jack. It making it clear that they're two very different personality types.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Again, I think they rush the Angela Marcus relationship, because it's not incredibly clear why they bond to the extent that Angela takes Marcus to the art class. I think it's to do with the editing, because there's a scene before that where you cut to a character approaching Marcus just hanging out in the office talking to Angela for some reason. And then it's after the disastrous presentation where it's suggested that Marcus takes a few weeks paid leave, and this is what leads to him meeting the kids.
Yeah.
And even then, the actual relationship, it's kind of rushed through, again, because I just think it's paced fairly badly at the end.
Yeah.
And then the career change, which leads to the final scene, like the final scene proper. Again, that seems like a complete 180 character turn. I can see why it was done, to show that without love in her heart and... you know, by having a high-paid job, it's going to turn you a bit cold and such like. So I understand how it works on paper. I don't think it was pulled off in the actual filming.
I think you're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so any kind of favourite moments that we haven't touched upon or that you'd want to go into in a bit more detail?
Baron Samedi's video work. First one with a woman licking between some cherries.
And the banana.
The banana and all that. Yeah, that's funny. And it's an effective scene. I like that one because it does show the absurdist nature of the film.
Yeah.
But also how the character of Marcus is kind of good at his job. Like, yeah, very nice, well done. But I need you to... And it like keeps it in the realms of reality and possibility rather than completely going off the end of absurdity.
It very much establishes that his... Nelson is the character's name.
Right.
That Nelson needs to be reined in, because if you don't supervise him... Well, we find out what happens when that happens later on.
Yes, and that's an amazing...
So it's a very good setup to something that pays off later in the film.
Yeah. I like the way they shoot the ad agency, or like the office scenes are quite good. And like I say, there's a message here somewhere, and I think it's cleverer than it is. Whether it's a 1990s thing about, look, we're going to really blow everybody's minds by having a man being womanized by a woman.
Yeah, story from Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
And again, I think that helps because it gives him some steer on how he wants his character and the world to be portrayed.
Yes.
So it's actually scripted by two other guys. Interestingly, one of them was the guy who'd go on to make the wrestling documentary Beyond the Mat.
Oh.
Which I borrowed off a friend on VHS. I don't know if you were there watching it with me.
I don't think so.
It's the one where Mick Foley gets bludgeoned in the head with a chair by The Rock too many times at the Royal Rumble.
Excellent. Yeah.
So that's Barry W. Blaustein.
I think we talked about him already because he did the screenplay to Coming to America.
Oh, well, that would make sense.
And as did the other guy, Blaustein in Sheffield.
Well, there we go. His go-to guys.
Yeah.
Whereas the director, Reginald Hudlin, he was picked because he'd had a big hit 2 years prior with a film called House Party.
Okay.
That had a cartoon series that was shown on Channel 4 called Kid and Play.
Okay.
Because they were the two guys who starred in that film.
Fine.
And the antagonists of House Party are recast in this film as Gerard's parents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then with regards to other kind of comedy connections, you know the neighbour of Marcus...
Who has
the restraining order. That actress's name is Tisha Campbell.
Right.
And she'd go on to play Martin Lawrence's wife in Martin Lawrence's sitcom.
Oh, okay.
Called Martin, because original.
Of course.
Well, you know, Seinfeld, Frasier, you know.
I've just spotted that she was also in the film version of Little Shop of Horrors.
She was. She was one of the chorus.
Yeah. Chiffon.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you which was which.
No, me neither.
And that is not me being racist. So, as a film, it was made for $42 million and came back with a box office of $131 million. So that's a respectable take.
Yeah.
But it got a mixed reception at the time it was released.
You're kidding.
However, it's one of those films that a lot of people agree has aged relatively well. To the extent that you couldn't necessarily say, ah yes, 1992.
Early 90s.
Yeah. It's a film that people reckon holds up 30 years on.
I would disagree with them.
Okay, well, I take the opposite view. I think it holds up.
Agree to disagree.
That is absolutely fine. And I tell you what, brother. You know what I find helps break the tension when brothers agree to disagree? It's sitting down over a lovely dinner, such as that of Omaha Steaks.
What?
Which I think you'll find are the creme de la creme of mail order barbary. And if you look at Hey An Actor and our website, you too can get a promo code off of Omaha Steaks. In fact, I've got some in, you know how Dropbox is a physical, Pandy?
Yes.
I've got some Omaha Steaks in this Dropbox.
Oh, okay.
Hang on. These aren't packs of Omaha Steaks. These are... Cerveza Cristal! Cerveza Cristal! Cerveza
Cristal! Oh, yeah.
You can see why I didn't want to delay the recording.
Oh, yeah.
topicality.
It's still meme worthy. Oh, delicious Carissa Cristal.
Yes, to wash down with your Omaha steak.
Quite.
Lovely stuff. So, anything more to say about Boomerang?
No.
No. Okay, then. In which case, we will move on from relative try. It's a mixed response from the brothers Wilson or Edinburgh Wilson. We'll now move on to something that's surely a red-hot triumph. The next thing to come, brother, is Catwoman.
Oh, good. Something that makes sense.
Yes.
What the hell is wrong with you, Phillips? Your incompetence is staggering.
All my life, I felt powerless. I've never stood up for myself. But then...
You can come out now, it's okay.
I think maybe I'm in the wrong...
Everything changed. You died, but you were reborn. By accepting all of who you are, you can be free.
She's very self-confident, almost angry.
I'm sorry, what was that? Allergies?
This person doesn't like to play by all the rules.
Amateurs.
Deep Sage jumps around like a cat. What should we call her?
Catwoman. You heard of her?
Oh, yeah. Hot. Black leather. Whip.
You're gonna look like a cop killer.
I might not be a hero. But I'm certainly not a killer.
Put your hands on your head. Ooh.
Looking back on it now, dying was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Catwoman is an epic tale of betrayal and feline fun. Oh, God. From 2004, starring Halle Berry, Benjamin Bratt, Lambert Wilson, Sharon Stone, and Francis Conroy. No, me neither. And it's all about a lovely lady called Patience Phillips, who is a meek people pleaser and is all about the being humble and sticking to her work and getting her ass out there. But no, fashion is ruthless. And uh-oh, she discovers something she's not supposed to and dies. But does she? No, because she's resurrected because of Egyptian cat powers. And because of that, Jesus. And because of that, she is now a cat woman and is able to do all sorts of flips and tricks. Use a whip, drink milk, and make all the cat-related puns there are possibly able to be done. And she has to work out why she was killed, what's at stake, why is Lois Griffin dying, and try and evade capture from Detective of the Year, Benjamin Bratt. Now, it's a film that I have been aware of for many a year. Mainly because it has a reputation of being fairly terrible. And I was very keen to watch this. I think I possibly pushed for it when we had our original Halle Berry episode, but no, I was thwarted.
You did. You did.
Possibly because it was a comic book film and you were like, no, 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 I have another podcast which I'll definitely stick to for all time.
It was literally the last film I reviewed under the Comic Relief banner.
And what a swan song. And so I watched it for the first time. Had you seen... Oh, yeah, of course you had.
I rewatched
you
it.
You literally just said. Yeah. So you'd seen it before. Had I you had. Watched it again since?
As in before we decided to do it for this.
Yes.
No, I think when I did it for Comic Relief, that was the last time that I saw it prior to the other week when I watched it for this.
Uh-huh. And yeah. What did you think?
I'll say this. It isn't the worst comic book movie that I've ever covered.
Right.
I think it gets a rap because it is trying to have its cake of being named after a famous DC anti-hero, whilst at the same time not really having any connection to Batman. And I think that kind of annoyed a lot of people, because this did start out life as a kind of spin-off from Batman Returns.
Yes, it went through production hell.
It was in production hell and became its own thing, which was this.
Mm.
So, upon rewatching it for this, and I will admit, for this, I usually don't do this for films for Hay and Actor, because usually I really want to get into the meat, and especially if it's a film I'm watching for the first time, I will not watch it speeded up. I watched this film on double speed. And it, I tell you what, it was a lot better.
God, some of those flips and tricks must have been really
cool. Oh, they were. Don't get me wrong. You could hardly tell it was CGI. All charity aside, it's a very weak action film.
Right.
It's not really a proper comic book movie. I mean, even if you were to say it was a kind of Elseworlds DC thing, because there is an image of Michelle Pfeiffer in the cat suits in the film.
Right.
But that is as close a tie as you get. And otherwise, it's just, oh, it's a bit of a chore. But as I say, not the worst comic book movie I've ever seen. But it's not a good film either. It really isn't.
Mm.
This was your first time watching it, brother.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. It's trying to ride the coattails of a kind of popular brand of superhero. It's got shonky CGI in it. It's got a lead actor who has since denounced the film as being pants and rubbish.
Yes.
It has Scandalous by Mystique on the soundtrack. And, oh, hang on a minute. They're my notes for Madame Web.
What?
This film is Madame Web.
Have you seen Madame Web?
I've seen Madame Web.
Oh, wow.
And whilst I was watching Catwoman, I kept thinking, holy shit, this is Madame Web. Now,
the original Madame Web.
As in the one that came out this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what I will say, though, is Catwoman is better than Madame Web. Because there is an attempt. There is credible acting performances throughout from every character. Whereas in Madame Web,
that's really generous.
Okay, fine. They really try. You know, Merovingian is really trying his best, but
Cousin Lambert.
Yes. But the antagonist in Madame Web is also kind of a non-English speaking national, but they do a terrible job at dubbing him.
Right.
Whereas Lambert Wilson, I think that's him doing his own lines.
Oh, yeah.
And putting on some kind of accents, and he's doing...
Well, he is French.
Yes. So. Yeah. But I don't think he's trying to be French in the film, is what I mean.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. And he's getting away with it. But, you know. So, yeah. But I'm sure we'll talk more about Madame Web another time, but it's just because it's, you know, as current as Cerveza Crystal, Madame Web and Cowboy. It's a bad film. It's not good at all. I was kind of disappointed by it not being overly bad, but it really is not good. There are so many plot holes and bullshit. The CGI has not aged well. It comes out of that kind of unique period of the noughties where they're clearly thinking, ah yes, the video game tie-in, which will be made by Eurocom Games in Derby or something like that. It's just not good at all. What I will say is Halle Berry does a damn good job with what she's been given.
She's been given the opportunity to carry a film.
Yeah.
And she, above all else, at this time wanted to prove that she could carry her own film. So I think she puts a lot of work into it.
I think she does certainly the best possible with what she's been given. And she's got to deliver these horrible cat puns.
Oh, yeah.
She's got to... Okay. Again, red-blooded man. She's got to look the part, and goddamn, she's attractive in this film.
Yep.
Oh, man. I think that the story itself is flawed from the start. The character of Patience Phillips is a bit rubbish. But, you know, she does well at kind of turning from mild-mannered subservient into badass bitch. The cat-themed bitch, anyway. Badass kitten. My pussy. Anyway, she does her absolute best. And I think the worst thing about this film cannot be laid at her door. So as a showpiece for Halle Berry, I think it speaks to her strengths that she's able to put in as good a performance as she does.
Yep. An award-winning performance.
I know. And I think that's really unfair.
I think as you get older, you do realise that the Razzies are a little bit unfair.
Yeah. And I've not seen any of the other performances of Worst Actress at the Razzies that year. Right. As in, like, I've not seen Alexander, so don't know about Angelina Jolie or, you know, for fuck's sake.
It wasn't a banner year because Worst Actor was George W. Bush as himself in Fahrenheit 9/11.
Ugh. Come on now.
I know.
And for fuck's sake, she was up against Sean and Marlon Wayans in the Worst Actress category.
Yeah.
That's a low blow.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. But, you know, she does absolutely all she possibly can do. And unfortunately, it doesn't save the film. The most egregious thing about this film is fucking Benjamin Bratt's horrible character. The most inept police person there ever was.
This is carrying on your grudge from Miss Congeniality.
Absolutely.
One and two.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in two.
But it's two, why you hate him in one.
Yes, because he's completely undone in one like letter or one answer phone message at the beginning of the film.
Mm.
Ah, disgraceful. But you know, you see...
You think Benjamin Bratt is the worst thing about Catwoman?
I think his character is.
Really?
I mean, apart from the terrible story and the CGI and just the premise of Egyptian cats, goddess. Mm. No, I hate the idea that the main kind of threat at the beginning is someone she's very clearly linked to, very slowly uncovering that she may or may not be this brand new vigilante who's obsessed with cat things all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Ah, for God's sake. It's terribly written, this film. Who wrote it? Let me have a look. Screenplay by, it's two people. There you go. The same person, or the same people who brought you Terminator 3 and Terminator 4.
Now, I haven't seen Terminator 4.
I have seen
Terminator. Okay. Terminator 4, Christian Bale just scared me off.
For fuck's sake.
And the other guy created the Jackie Chan Adventures.
I've just read that. And again, that was a great show.
Sure it was.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Hey, Jackie, what do you do about bullying?
You do not fight them.
Okay.
Wah!
Oh, God.
That's how they would do it in the film.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
not
tugging
racist.
My collar
he
at
also
that, yeah.
Wrote The Core.
Oh, The Core's funny.
It's a terrible film because Kel likes it.
All right. Well, for Aaron Eckhart, man.
Oh, fuck off. Do the Tucci Munch. Munch first. Tucci. What? Tucci Munch. Tucci Month is what I meant to say.
Okay.
It's a difficult thing to say.
It sure is. I don't think Benjamin Bratt is the worst thing. As a character beat, not ideal.
Okay.
I think I'm more disappointed with the fact that the plot revolves around evil makeup.
I mean, I suppose so.
And again, if you're going to go into like Batman IP, then why not use a Roland Daggett chemist or Clayface or something like that? Here we have Sharon Stone with her rock hard face. Sharon Stone with your face. Like a granite mould.
Yeah. But it clearly works. And the only problem with it is if you ever stop, you might die. I mean, just wear it forever and you've got a superpower.
Yeah, I think there is a kind of drug analogy. Like it becomes addictive. Therefore, you know, it's a case of you'll lose your money to it and then die when you can't afford any more.
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah. And I don't think it's necessarily Sharon Stone's fault.
No.
I don't think she was getting a lot of work at this time. But it doesn't help.
No.
No. You asked who the hell is Francis Conroy?
Yes.
So this was one of those films where they picked up someone who was on a hot, I was about to say sitcom, hot TV show at the time.
Okay.
She was the matriarch in the show 6 Feet Under.
Oh, okay.
Which I never watched. But was
no need to, that's one with Dexter in it, right?
Yes, it was what Dexter did before Dexter.
Ah.
Yeah. He was basically the Eric Foreman of that show.
Oh. So
not the star, but right up there.
Right, okay.
And as we say, you've got Lois Griffin as the best friend.
Yeah.
And then the henchman, this is interesting, you've got Ryu from Street Fighter.
Oh, God.
Byron Mann.
Right.
Okay. Who's showbiz pals with Donovan Morgan Grant.
Oh, really?
Yes. Or they're Twitter buddies or something.
Oh, okay.
And then the other guy is Michael Massey, who is somewhat infamous as the guy who killed Brandon Lee on the set of The Crow.
The fuck?
You've heard about Brandon Lee and The Crow?
I heard... some, yeah, maybe.
So it was a tragic filming accident. It's kind of like Alec Baldwin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So basically, Michael Massey was playing one of the four guys that the Crow's hunting down.
Right.
And Michael Massey was given a prop gun that hadn't been loaded correctly. He shoots Brandon Lee and it turns out it's fatal.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Now, Brandon Lee had completed like 95% of the film, so they were able to basically get it completed. But Michael Massey basically retreated into himself. He didn't work for a good few years afterwards.
God.
Of his own volition.
That poor guy.
It's a shame, but he's resumed his acting career. He was also in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man films.
Oh, okay.
So, you've seen them?
Just the first one, actually. I didn't watch the second one.
Okay, well, yeah, that's just as well. screw you, Donovan. But Michael Massey is the guy at the end of the film who approaches the lizard and asks about the identity of Spider-Man, because basically the idea is if that series of films had been successful, he would have been the guy bringing together the Sinister Six.
Right.
But ultimately that didn't happen.
Oh, it's a shame.
Not really.
Oh, apparently he was in Seven as well.
Okay. Who was he in Seven?
I have no idea.
Right, okay.
I just saw from his...
Man in Booth at Massage Parlor.
Well, I'm glad I brought him up.
Yeah.
Man in Booth.
Okay, so he did the odd job in the years immediately after The Crow, but not big ones.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Okay, so Catwoman.
What did you think of Halle Berry?
Again, as I say, I think Halle Berry gave it her all, which is what made her kind of subsequent rejection of the film afterwards all the more kind of puzzling.
I remember you thinking that.
And that is, I mean, because I listened back to our original Halle Berry episode.
Right.
And I was kind of fearful because I was thinking, well, at the time, bear in mind this is not quite 10 years ago because obviously it's just younger than Evie is now.
Yeah.
But the best part of 10 years ago. And, well, certainly in the noughties, she didn't have the greatest reputation because of her Oscar win for Monsters Ball. Saw her kind of being suddenly a bit more kind of demanding about certainly her placement in the X-Men franchise.
Right.
And then wanting, like, the spin-off of Die Another Day to have her in Jinx film.
Oh, and yeah.
I think because that fell through, she had that much more to prove in this here Catwoman film. And having listened back to my take about it, I'm happy that I don't go so far as to just write her off as an angry black woman or anything like that. And we'll get into this a bit more later after we've finished the third film. But at the time, the fact that she went up and accepted her Razzie Award for this film was impressive. But he did say, yeah, that film was a piece of shit, right, guys? Oh, piss off, you untalented bastard making me act in that film. Right, guys? I'm like, yeah, all right, fine. But, I mean, in fairness to her, pit off the McGee of France.
I didn't know what you were saying there for a minute. Yeah, I forgot. Pit off. Yeah. I've never heard of pit off.
And, well, a good reason. Yeah, it's fair to say his directorial career didn't really go much further after that.
Ah,
but it's not a very well-directed film. But then the story's not very good. And, you know, you combine all those things together. I mean, I was surprised how much I enjoyed the basketball mystique flirting bit. But then, again, it was on double speed, so it was funny.
Yeah, that's why they got to be scared of us.
And then I thought what was kind of interesting about some of the action scenes was, yes, overtly CGI, but it seemed to be reused later on in Arkham City when you get to play as Catwoman.
Okay.
Albeit a different kind of Catwoman.
Yes.
Like Selina Kyle, who, you know, interacts with Batman and other people in Gotham City.
Yeah. No, this is a different Catwoman. There have been loads of Catwomans, brother.
It's based on Catwoman. And interestingly, it credits Catwoman by Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
Oh, they remembered him this time.
Yeah, well, the thing was, it was after Bob Kane died.
Right.
It didn't come soon enough. bastard. But yes, they started crediting Bill Finger as being a co-creator on Batman and Batman-related property. I think, I could be wrong, that this might have been the first kind of Batman project where Bill Finger was actually credited. But even then, that's not enough to save this film. There's very little that's original about this film. And you can say that a lot of the origin is kind of lifted from Batman Returns to begin with.
I guess so. Dead, being brought back by a cat.
I never thought Selina Kyle died in Batman Returns. I just thought she needed reviving after severe brain damage from plunging down several stories of a building. I don't know to what extent falling through some canvases breaks the fall. But there we go. And obviously, Tim Burton makes it all very dark. I'm surprised a skeleton didn't hang by a noose.
As an Olympic mascot.
Indeed. I think that's the thing. It's too generic to be insulting to the Batman legacy. And it doesn't lean into the Batman legacy enough to really make it stand apart. So it's a dual issue, says I. What about you?
It's a mess. It's just not entertaining. There are so many things that don't make sense or are poorly executed. It's not great. I think, like I said earlier, Halle Berry looks the part, acts the part in as much as she possibly can do, but she's fighting a losing battle. I'm glad I finally watched this. The costume's nice.
Well, I tell you what. Immediately after I watched, I say immediately, the next couple of films that I watched after Catwoman is because I really wanted to sort out the lower end of my flick chart.
Oh, of course you did.
So I watched a few other comic book movies that I also knew to be stinkers. And so I rewatched I, Frankenstein,
right.
Speaking of Aaron Eckhart, and X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh, God.
Both films worse than Catwoman.
I can believe it.
As is Elektra, The Green Hornet, and Kick-Ass 2. Oh, and Son of the Mask.
Ah. Oh, yeah, it's still a comic book film, isn't it?
Yeah, technically. Yeah.
Blech.
Now, I know you're a big fan of the costume, Pandy.
Yes, I am.
I mean, a woman basically going around in lingerie. And
boy.
I think if you want to achieve that look, especially as a man, perhaps not that look as a man, although, you know, 21st century, go nuts.
Don't kink shame.
Exactly. If you want solid, dependable underwear, you should really check out MeUndies. And if you go to the Hey and Actor website, there'll be a promo code. Just type in HA and you'll get 10% off your first packet of MeUndies.
MeUndies.
Yeah, MeUndies. And as you'll see, brother, I've sent through a box of MeUndies. So there'll be MeUndies in there to share. I mean, let's just open it up and check.
Oh, yeah, I've got my box here in front of me.
Okay, well, let's open this up then.
Okay.
Wait a minute. This box of MeUndies doesn't have any MeUndies in it. Why, it's... Cerveza Cristal!
Cerveza Cristal! Not again!
Oh, my mistake.
Oh, come on.
I've got our endorsements mixed up.
Oh, for goodness sake.
This is all for next month.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay. But, this is very refreshing, though. let me just crack one open. That's a box of screws. Anyway, hey.
Why have you got a box of screws?
I've been doing some handiwork. Anyway, okay. Speaking of screws, let's talk about our feature film today, Cloud Atlas.
I tell you what, brother.
Yeah?
That link was pants.
I thought you were going to say that I was really speaking the screws.
That will make sense, the other side of this trailer.
This is the Cloud Atlas sextet?
I doubt there's more than a handful of copies in all of North America.
But I know it.
That's it. The music from my dream.
There are whole movements I wrote imagining us meeting again and again in different lives, in different ages.
I can't explain it, but I knew when I opened that door,
a powerful deja vu ran through my bones.
I heard it in a dream. I was in a nightmarish cafe, and the waitresses all had the same face.
No reason to hide. I know you are Sonmi 451.
Yesterday, my life was headed in one direction. Today, it is headed in another.
You ever think the universe is against you?
Fear. Belief, love, phenomena that determine the course of our lives. These forces begin long before we are born and continue after we perish.
Our lives are not our own. We are bound to others. Present. And by each crime and every kindness, we birth our future.
I won't let you go again.
I believe there is another world waiting for us, a better world. And I'll be waiting for you there.
Cloud Atlas is a 2012 epic science fiction film which was written and directed by the Wachowskis, as well as Tom Tykwer. No, me neither.
Isn't he that New Zealand guy who you haze? Oh, no, wait, that's Taika Waititi.
Correct, yes. And it's based on a 2004 novel by David Mitchell.
Yes, I wrote it.
Yes, from Mitchell and Webb, obviously. and it is a story that, oh boy, how do I describe this one? So basically, it is a story that sets itself across six different eras from 1849 to 2321. Six different stories, although the events chronologically of each kind of saga plays in somehow to the next one, yet they're all shown out of sequence, which is to say that you jump from one saga to another one. And the main characters in each saga, they're all played by basically the same collective of actors.
Yeah.
And those actors are, indeed, Halle Berry, former Haar subject Tom Hanks, former Haar subject Hugo Weaving, Jim Broadbent, Ben Whishaw, Jim Sturgis, Hugh Grant, Susan Sarandon, James Darcy, Keith David, Doona Bay, I'm not skipping over the people I don't recognise, and others. And, yeah, it is a difficult film to really go into. I mean, we can certainly talk about each saga in brief, but, each of the kind of main actors plays the protagonist of, each of the six sagas. So Hugo Weaving and Hugh Grant and Susan Sarandon don't have their own dedicated saga. In fact, some of them aren't in all of them either. But it is interesting to see how it all plays out. Some of it involves slight racial makeup.
Yes, yes.
And changing genders. But hey, it's the Wachowskis. just thinking about the recent news. Ultimately, it is this big epic film in many ways. It's both historical and sci-fi, and plays with a lot of ideas.
Indeed.
And this was my first time watching it. Brother, I know you've seen this before.
Yeah.
Because I seem to recall you waxing lyrical, which is to say you were positive about it when you've previously mentioned it. Is that right? And when did you first see it?
It is right. I like this film, and I'll talk more about why I like it soon. But I watched this on my honeymoon, actually. It was one of the films that we rented whilst we were in Centre Parcs on our honeymoon, because we're classy like that. I think it's fair to say that we were both so tired, and in my case probably drunk, that it kind of went over our heads, but it was a really interesting concept of a film to watch, because like you said, you've got the same actors playing multiple different parts in multiple different stories across different times. And the idea is that the different actors are kind of playing the souls of certain characters,
right?
Which kind of explains why they've kind of played around with, we'll have this person play this soul. No, actually this person will play this soul in this timeline because they link together in a certain way. And I think that is kind of true in some ways, that, like for example, you've got similarities between, Doona Bay, you mentioned earlier, who I don't know apart from in this film, South Korean actress. She kind of plays, her main storyline is her being a kind of repressed sort of android fabricant creature from Neo Seoul in 2144. But you've then got her very first storyline, or the very first kind of timeline that she's in. She's playing the kind of shy, scared, retiring daughter of a very powerful, angry Hugo Weaving. And it's her kind of finding strength right at the end of that particular storyline. So there's a sort of link between there and there. What there isn't, though, is a link between her, that and her Mexican woman character in San Francisco in 1973. So I think they use the word souls to try and justify some of the connections between some of the characters. But what I really like about it is it's a thinker. And it makes you kind of investigate and explore and think about how that links to that. Or the whole point of the film is kind of the butterfly effect thing of one person doing one thing at one time impacts something else that happens in the future, whether it's directly or that they in a lot of cases work, they watched or read something that they said, which kind of rang true for them or something like that. And it kind of makes you think about how, you know, if that didn't happen, how that would happen. And it makes a point very early on about, oh, this looks like they're not connected, but actually, if you think about it, they kind of are. And, you know, it's the Wachowskis, they're being wacky. And one of the wacky things they do is they keep splicing between different stories. And the stories themselves are not small. Some of them are kind of bigger in others, and they have similar links. Like within a lot of stories, there are kind of moments of jeopardy and conflict, and they're all cut together in a big package of like, oh no, everything looks bad for these characters and these characters and these characters. But then there's some sort of redemption in all these stories at all this time. Or sometimes it kind of swerves and has a little kind of subtle moments with Ben Whishaw's character in 1936. There's so much I like about this film in terms of the interesting way that it was made. And I like to kind of, it's possibly one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of Taskmaster. I love to kind of imagine and think about not just the entertaining content, but also how they came about it and how they made it and the production side of things. I made my own version of Taskmaster one summer, which was a labor of love and no mistake, and made me really appreciate how they edit and think.
The editors.
Yeah, it really does. But yeah. I was such a big fan watching it first time round, even though I didn't really take it in. Watched it at least once, maybe not all the way through before rewatching it this time round. This time round, watched it again and absolutely loved it and found it funny and silly. And I mean, you've mentioned the kind of the race bending and the gender bending going on in some of these things, and I think you could look at, say, the kind of Asianing up of a lot of characters in Neo Seoul and vice versa, kind of the westernizing of Duna Bay to be Tilda Ewing, yeah, in 1849. Yeah. It's all fair game. I think what they don't do is kind of white anyone up completely.
I think they white Halle Berry up at one
stage. They do, don't? Yes, because she's Jocasta. Yeah, but you don't see Keith David being whited up. Or...
No, that would be impressive.
I'd love that. Hello, my name is George. Anyway, I think the makeup is done in a kind of faithful way. I think you might lay accusations of kind of white facing, black facing, yellow facing, whatever at its door, but ultimately they kind of fall flat for me because they've got this kind of souls connection and the storyline connection. And it's such an interesting concept to have the same actors playing multiple different parts.
Yeah. I don't think the intent is there to offend.
Oh, good God. No, no.
So I think that's what kind of makes it different than Bernard Breslau in A Carry On. And even then, Bernard Breslau never intended to offend, but no. he did his research whenever he blacked up. But
yes.
The fact that I had to say that out loud.
Bernard Breslau researched before blacking up.
He did.
Yeah, he did. I'm sure. But yeah, so I've had the benefit of kind of thinking about this over multiple years and a couple of rewatchings. Yes. What was your main takeaway in the clusterfuck that is Cloud Atlas?
I came out of it very impressed.
Okay.
Now, I needed an entire Sunday afternoon to watch the film.
Yeah, it's not a short film.
It is a three-hour long film.
I mean, there are six storylines to get through.
Well, that's the thing, because you could be forgiven for thinking that that is far too long and self-indulgent, but at the same time, I think each story basically gets a good showing. And what is important about the fact that you've got a different actor playing a different protagonist in each, it means it gives them all kind of, not equal time to shine, but it all gives them their moment, their story, before they kind of become second fiddle to the other stories around them. And I was really impressed with the inventiveness and the ideas behind it, how it was pulled off, because at this stage, the Wachowskis have, they've done the Matrix trilogy, they've done Speed Racer.
I've never watched Speed Racer.
But the thing is, they're at this point, they're very accomplished filmmakers. And this is something that matches the ambition and the scale of the original Matrix.
Yeah.
And I can't really pay them a higher compliment than that, really. It is in my top 100 in flick charts.
Wow.
Albeit lower end.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. There are better films. but I was very impressed with the idea, the fact that it is so different. I mean, it's not different to have a film that encapsulates several stories, but this is one where, unlike, say, let's say Avengers Infinity War.
Okay.
Where you've got different characters doing different things in the face of Thanos and the big threat and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's been half an hour. Where the fuck's Spider-Man? And you never think that about these stories. I mean, there can be considerable gaps between getting to each story, but I think credit is where it's due, is that they do mix between them. And it's done in such a way that you kind of enjoy the switch between, rather than if it were these six stories kind of back to back to back, it would make more linear sense. But as I think Memento proved, where's the fun in that? You know? So, you know, go for it. Jumble them up. It's like, make us ask questions. And give us a reason to watch it again.
Yeah.
Because, so did he say that you're watching it for this was your second time viewing?
I think second time proper. I know I've maybe started to watch it or watched little bits of it or had it on in the background of something, but this is my second proper rewatch.
Fine, fine. So, you know, so it is something that will hold a different appeal the next time I watch it. Not in a downward trajectory, but I might spot certain things that I didn't spot the first time around.
Yeah.
Funny, because I wasn't really looking out for them.
Well, it's incredibly dense.
Yes.
And there's so much kind of playing between the different scenes or links between scenes, or because each storyline is its own, you know, different setting locations and, you know, sets of makeup and stuff. They all look beautiful. And are kind of properly dressed, and like the lovely house in Edinburgh in 1936 is all old and rickety with kind of period features and lovely books and stuff. Neo Soul is glorious in its own way with lots of beautiful CGI buildings and kind of augmented reality technologies. Kind of wipe a hand and the dull room turns into like a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
It looks great, so every time you watch, I'm sure there's something you'll find. And I think that is one of the things I've seen in kind of breaking down people's opinions of the film, is that it definitely rewards rewatching. It's a big ask, because it's near enough 3 hours, as you say.
Yes.
But you know, if you are willing to put the time and the effort into it, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
To the end where... And you'll be impressed by this, it's actually inspired me to start reading the book.
Okay.
Albeit I've been listening to the audiobook because I don't have, you know, the time to pick up a book. But it's great to have on a bike ride or whilst doing gardening or something. Where it's different, the novel to the film, is all the storylines, that they're all in two parts apart from the chronologically, the final one, they all go in order, starting with the voyage in the 19th century up to the very end. And then they kind of go backwards through time. So you finish with the Pacific Journal of Adam Ewing, and you kind of see how it all links together in that kind of a way.
Right.
It's got the same characters. Obviously, I know what's going to happen, but it's really interesting to kind of deep dive into all the different parts. I'm only really on the first part of the in the film it's Edinburgh, in the book it's Belgium, Zedelgem, where Robert Frobisher goes to spend time with Frobisher.
Vivien Ayres.
Ayres, thank you, yes. Yeah. But yeah, I thought you'd be impressed by the idea that I'm actually reading a book on the back of a film.
I mean, I would be if you were reading the book.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
I'm engaging with the book. I started listening to Bridget Christie's audiobook, and she kind of starts off with a, God, imagine just listening to an audiobook. How lazy are you? You know what? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, okay. So, with regards to that, we're here because Halle Berry is one of the principal cast.
Yes.
Her story is specifically around an investigative journalist called Louisa Ray, who is looking at, she's digging into the empire of Hugh Grant or something.
She's investigating a nuclear program.
Yes.
The case of which has kind of landed in her lap through her connection to
Sixsmith,
who we saw in Edinburgh in 1936.
We saw Cambridge, him in Cambridge.
Okay, fine. He's the recipient of all the letters from Frobisher.
Yes.
But he is aged and is working on this nuclear program in San Francisco in 1973. And she's the investigative journalist, finding all these things out and getting embroiled in a scandal or a potential murdery plotty thing. Yeah, scary. I think it's also fair to say that she's got a very high profile role in the final storyline as well, kind of alongside Tom Hanks's main protagonist role.
Yeah.
In the, was it, 2321, on Big Island, 106 winters after the fall. So obviously Marky Smith lived for, for a very long time.
That is a niche joke. Wow. Write in if any of you gets that. And if you're American, well, I'll be damned.
Just on the Facebook page, just hashtag Marky Smith. let's rack them up. So yeah. She's fairly high profile in a few different storylines. I mean, she's there as Louisa Ray in 1973. She's there as Meronym at the very end. I think the third most high profile role is probably Jocasta Ayres, the wife of Vivien Ayres.
Yeah.
And
that's where she's kind of whited up.
She's whited up there. She's also there as Indian party guest in London 2012. I didn't spot her. I should look back at that.
Well, for your next view.
Well, yeah. And then she's native woman on the Pacific Islands. So, you know. Some of the roles are not massive.
No. And that is important because you can't give everyone equal screen time.
No.
But it makes sense to give some prominence to the biggest stars who are going to sell the film.
Yeah.
So Berry's one, Hanks is another.
Yeah.
Hugh Grant to an extent, although he doesn't have his own dedicated story.
He doesn't, but he's English in every one of his roles.
And he's an arsehole in them.
Yes.
Every single one of them.
And,
yeah.
And similarly, I mean, I don't want to say that he's typecast, but Hugo Weaving is the antagonist in every single one.
I would say, I don't think Hugh Grant is technically English in the final saga.
He's old Georgie.
No, Hugh Grant, not Hugh.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't say anything.
But he's not English.
He's kind of sleeping in English.
And also, Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. She's there a little bit.
Yeah, she's a bit part player.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
But yes, Hugo Weaving, he chews the scenery quite a lot.
He does.
He's even in the 2012 saga, he basically plays Nurse Ratchet to Jim Broadbent.
I love him in that. Yeah. He's so good as this kind of type character.
Oh my God.
No?
I'm going to beat that.
Okay.
Just in case.
Just in case. Yeah. I mean, Nurse Ratched is definitely there, but more kind of this prim and proper English lady. Nope, yeah. You will not fuck with me. I'm Nurse Noakes. just glorious.
Now, I was impressed by Ben Whishaw.
Yeah.
So this was the same year that he would appear as Q in Skyfall.
Right.
And he had previously worked with the director who isn't the Wachowskis, Tom Tykwer, in the film Perfume, The Story of a Murderer.
Oh.
He is the murderer. With a defined sense of smell, and it puts him at odds with Alan Rickman, because the person who smells the best is Alan Rickman's daughter, whom he must murder.
Of course.
So that was 2006 era Ben Whishaw. But, you know, this is early 2010s where his star's kind of on the ascendant. He would then also play opposite Hugh Grant in a TV series called A Very English Scandal in 2018.
Ah, yes.
In which he played the lover of the leader of the Liberal Party in the 1970s.
Ooh la la.
Who said leader tried to have him killed, but only ended up killing his dog. So that is called A Very English Scandal.
Hmm. How naughty.
How very naughty. And then obviously he's the voice of Paddington as well.
Yeah, the harbinger of death. I know, I've realised the very first time I saw him was in the Channel 4 irreverent comedy Nathan Barley.
Oh, I never watched Nathan Barley.
Did you not?
No.
It was something that was, I mean, I watched it, but nobody else at school did. And then I went to university and a few people had watched it and we were quite close because of it.
Right.
I don't remember much about it. Apart from it's got like a very early showing for the Boosh.
Well, it was written by Chris Morris and Charlie Brooker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hence and why then, I watched it.
Similarly, when I was at university, I showed people Brass Eye.
Right.
And like, one of the guys that I went on to share a house with the next year, he absolutely lost his shit where Claire Rayner said that she would beat off any man. he was very amused.
And who would pay for the dry cleaning afterwards?
Again, now, this is someone who's had a much longer career, but Jim Broadbent was fun.
Wasn't he?
I enjoyed the story of Timothy Cavendish.
Yes.
And then, because that plays into the Nurse Noakes thing.
Yeah.
And then, ostensibly, he is stitched up by his brother, again played by Hugh Grant, but who seems to be channeling Roger Daltrey.
Yes. Kind of matched with anyone from Sexy Beast.
Yes. But he played Vivian Ayres as Whishaw's antagonist, or Frobisher's antagonist. I mean, I don't really remember his other roles as distinctly.
I mean, in the credits, they do kind of show who all the different characters were in the different eras. Mm. And I think my favourite of Jim Broadbent, he's just somebody in the background in Neo Soul, and he's kind of looks over and goes, bah!
It does say Korean musician.
He does. I don't know if he had a second role. I think they do double up in some places, like Duna Bay is Megan's mom / Mexican woman.
Yeah.
There might be some other ones, I don't know.
I mean, and also she played, because Sobney's a kind of clone. She plays so. Like multiple versions of that. But yeah, Duna Bay, fine. Don't know very much about her.
No.
Jim Sturgess? I've really come across.
No.
But he did very well as the young doctor being poisoned.
Yeah.
As our kind of Asian man protagonist.
Asian man. He was the Asian man, is really.
Have we really talked about Hanks?
About Hanks? I mean, yeah. Hanks is living his best life in this. he starts out as a kind of evil doctor, but kind of eccentric. He's a Scottish hotel manager.
Yes.
Who steals a waistcoat. He's then a scientist who smokes weed for the first time with Halle Berry.
Yeah.
He then plays an Irish thug.
Gangster.
Yeah. Who throws someone off a balcony.
A literary critic.
And he's there going, oh, fucking hell, I'm Irish. Yeah. Then he plays a kind of Hollywood version of Jim Broadbent in a kind of neo-soul, a version of the Cavendish story observed years later. And then he plays the kind of speaking to true-trues guy in 2321.
Yeah.
In order to do all those things, he's really kind of doing all sorts of different things, some more over the top than others. I think what there isn't with him is much of a kind of... Actually, that's not true. I was going to say it's not much of a sadness, but Zachary Bailey is a kind of...
Oh, okay.
A character who goes through all sorts. Yeah.
Like, when you first meet him chronologically.
Yeah.
Because when you first see him, he's introducing the film.
Yeah.
Like, after the events have largely happened.
Yeah.
But, how his story starts is pretty damn... sad.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think for the most parts, I'll probably eat my words in a minute, but because there are multiple actors playing multiple roles, there is a huge amount of range on show for pretty much everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, oh, who'd have thought Tom Hanks had such range?
Well, we have covered him previously on Hey, an Actor.
Yes.
But then you've got Jim Broadbent plays a kind of, well, racist captain of a ship. And then an eccentric, deaf old...
An unpleasant old man.
Then he plays a snivelling coward. Then he goons at someone. And then he's a kind of mystical figure. So, yeah, he's not got a huge amount to do. And I think most characters have got at least a few things that are kind of a bit different. Even Doona Bay is playing this kind of kick-ass kind of Mexican woman who ends up shooting a guy. Yeah. Hugo Weaving is a bad guy in all of these things, but he's like pompous evil guy, Nazi, assassin, woman, and then supernatural kind of Mighty Boosh character.
Not like the other. Old Georgie, yes.
Yeah, he's kind of playing the spirit of jazz. I mean, sad, your boy. But Halle Berry holds her own in amongst quite a star-powered cast.
Yeah, I mean, I think she does very well in the film. But I think the cast in general do very well. I think it's a very interesting matching of people who decided, yeah, we'll do it. Because, you know, some names were attached that ultimately didn't end up doing it. Mm-hmm. Such as Ian McKellen. And Natalie Portman.
Huh.
it seems like production-wise, it was very difficult because it's such an ambitious, unusual film.
It's 6 different films.
Yeah. And so it had financing issues. The Wachowskis and Taika shot different sagas.
Right.
So the Wachowskis did the 2 that were set in the future and, the ship, if memory serves, and then Taika did all the ones in between. And then after it was released, it turns out that it's a very divisive film.
I mean, divisive, yes, but, you know, well acted, looks great, very interesting, but did not do well at the box office.
No.
I mean, it made $130.5 million, but ultimately it looks like it, I mean, just about made its money back or made a mild loss, depending on which figures you're looking at.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Is it too high concept for the idiot public?
Yeah, who knows. But what's also interesting is that the people who made the film very much stood by it and how much they enjoyed doing it.
Oh, good.
I mean, Hanks, Berry, Broadbent and Grant are all just like, wow, that film was fucking awesome. It's like, we rewatched that and it's great.
I bet they had all sorts of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And David Mitchell had basically said, oh, this is never going to work as a film. and then watched the film and said, oh, it's magnificent. It's great. Yeah, loved it. So
I'm very happy with how they did my book.
Yes.
And my friend Robert Webb also agrees with me.
You see, if I could do a Robert Webb impression, I would join in, but I can't.
No, I'm not going to try. No. It's a really good film. I really enjoy it. And I'm glad we've been able to cover it. And I'm looking forward to watching it again. I want to finish reading the book. I might actually buy a copy of the book. How's that for you? How'd you like them apples?
Wow.
I know.
Well, someone's got a birthday coming up.
Ah. My joints are a little bit inflamed. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Well, I think you might benefit from something then, brother.
Oh, really?
Yes. Now, you're a lapsed, but someone who in the past could call themselves a wrestling fan.
I guess so. I dip in and out.
Do you remember Diamond Dallas Page?
How could I forget, brother?
Well, quite. He, legitimately, has been helping lots of people by devising his own yoga program.
Ah, that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And this is something that has genuinely helped the longevity of people like Chris Jericho. I don't know if that's an inspiration or not. But but basically keeping people limber and healthy and such like. And DDP can help you and show you the 5 core moves, or however many it is, of DDP yoga. You know what? I should really study up on that.
What a good idea.
If you go to the Hey and Actor website and get the promo code of HA yoga, and you'll get 8% off.
Eight.
Now, in the box, brother, the drop box, there are leaflets that set out the key principles of DDP yoga. So let's just open it up and hopefully we can do something about those head joints of yours.
Okay, I'm just going to open up the drawer.
Yep, me too. What? This box doesn't have packets of instructions for DDP yoga? Why, this is... Cerveza Cristal!
Cerveza Cristal! Again! It's happened again.
It's the rule of three.
Do you know how many units we've now had? Good God.
On a school night.
I know. I'm not a teacher anymore, so it doesn't matter.
So, Cloud Atlas then, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you for introducing me to it.
A pleasure. And I would ask everybody out there, watch Cloud Atlas and join us in the knowing... of knowing.
Yeah, it is a long film.
It's a long film. Put aside an afternoon or two.
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, you know, have a lovely Sunday roast. You know, have a lovely Cerveza Cristal. And then...
And have a meal.
Yes.
Yep.
What? and then watch Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right then. Okay, so we've now looked at 3 films of Halle Berry's. And after this here clip from Cloud Atlas, a plethora to choose from, we will come back and speak some more on that there Halle Berry.
Yippee.
If I were to die, just as well, my yawning is done.
No, you heard your granny. Come on, get on with you. Come on.
You like it out here, don't you, Grampy?
Supposing it reminds me of my valley.
Which is Earth?
There. That in there. That blue shimmer.
Now, help your grandpa up.
Oh, God. You're gonna tell us about the Wogsum ship and a big sleep and all the next-next?
Oh, your Grammy tells the next-next way better than me.
Just the love, Grammy.
Your Grammy is the best thing that ever happened to me.
Come on here, Grampy. Let me warm them old bones.
So it's the second bite of the cherry of Halle Berry, Pandy.
That's the phrase.
It is indeed. And again, I mentioned earlier in the recording that when we looked at her previously, I was a tad concerned that my previous appraisal was, ooh, angry black woman, not getting what she wanted with regards to franchises focused around her. But in a way, I'm glad that I didn't go full racist misogynist with regards to that. Full Hemmings on that.
Full Hemmings?
All right, Wimbush. He won't listen. Again, time is a great mellower, if you think about it, because not only is it the case that people are softening on their attitudes towards certain things, not so much Die Another Day, but there's been a new audience for Catwoman, surprisingly.
I'm one of them.
And when I say new audience, I mean people are coming around to it being not that bad and actually a bit of a camp classic.
I'm not one of those.
Now, the reason I know this is because I've taken a look at Halle Berry's Twitter feed.
All right.
And it's joyous.
Oh, okay.
If you look at it, it's like even she's come round on Catwoman.
Ah.
And she's like, oh, I'm glad that, you know, people are enjoying it after all these years.
Ah, so that cruelness that she pervaded at that awards ceremony come around to bite her in the arse.
Yeah,
eh?
I don't know if it's cruelness exactly, okay. But at the same time, it's clear that, again, we're all getting older and we let go of certain things.
Yeah.
It's like, Catwoman is not the worst thing ever.
No, Madame Web is.
Exactly. I say exactly, I haven't seen it, but, you know, I don't know whether I should pay money for it. I mean, it's probably out of the cinemas by now.
Probably.
Yeah. Again, another upside of our late recording, but, again.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I mean, just basically, if it appears in a few months and I don't have to pay for it, I will watch it out of morbid curiosity.
Morbid is the correct word.
So it's her from 50 Shades of Grey and who else?
Sydney Sweeney.
Right.
Who's attractive and gets her breasts out.
Her with the breasts, yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Two other horrible people. And what's the actor who's in Parks and Rec?
Adam Scott?
Yes, I think that's it.
The guy we covered in Little Evil.
What?
Little Evil for Evangeline Lilly Month.
The
comedy about being the stepfather to the spawn of Satan. Don't worry, I'll look it up. Don't worry.
I'm not sure. But yeah, he's in it.
Okay.
And you know, sorry, spoilers, but They keep talking about how he's Ben. He's Ben Parker.
Right.
Yes, Ben. Thanks, Ben.
Okay.
How's that pregnant sister of yours? Hey, Ben.
So it's ben set Parker. In the mid-20th century, is it?
Yeah.
Right.
It's basically they can't say Spider-Man, so they will just allude to him being Ben Parker as much as possible.
I see. No wonder Dakota Johnson takes the piss out of this on media junkets.
I mean, she's done the right thing.
Lovely stuff.
Again, she's kind of shot herself in the foot in some ways. I wonder if she'll have a kind of moment in a few years' time where she'll be on her Twitter feed going, actually, Madam Web wasn't the worst
thing in the world. She's this generation's Halle Berry.
I mean, clearly.
Let's steer it back to the the subject in hand.
Quite. Now, we've covered her filmography up to our previous episodes.
Yes, 2015.
Of which X-Men Days of Future Past was about to come out. Did you see that in the end?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I don't remember her being in it much.
Well, no, because I didn't focus very much on the kind of era in which what I would say our generation's filmic X-Men was set.
No, it was briefly kind of, here we are, now we must go back.
Yes, and also her role was greatly reduced because she was pregnant at the time.
Ah.
Which we did touch upon in the previous episode. So it's more of a kind of cameo appearance.
Yeah.
But, yep, again, she reprised her role as Storm for a fourth time in Days of Future Past.
Uh-huh.
And then 2015, I suppose she was busy giving
Being
birth.
Being a mom.
You know.
Hey, so was I.
Yeah, oh, thank you, Kelly. I didn't know you could throw your voice that way.
Yes, I can.
Yes.
My husband is the best.
Oh, that's definitely not Kelly. Oh,
thanks, I'm back in the room now.
So the next filmic credit... The next credit she had after we recorded our initial episode was she had an appearance in a Kevin Hart comedy special.
Hooray.
Yes. She did some actual movies in 2017.
Yeah, three films all beginning with the letter K. That's quite unfortunate. Kidnap Kings and Kingsmen.
So,
it's the crusty comedy classics.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not good.
Now, the only one that I think warrants even a bit of discussion is probably Kingsman.
Okay, I've still not seen any Kingsman films.
I've seen the first one. This is the sequel, which I haven't seen, because there's an egregious kind of retcon.
Okay.
Which I think the authors did their best to write around, but someone blatantly dies in the original Kingsman film.
Right.
And then they just come back for this sequel.
Oh.
So...
Well.
So that's a problem.
Okay. Well, don't spoil it.
No, I won't spoil it. But, you know, it's the second film and they've done a bit of a franchise because there's a prequel now.
Oh, yes.
I think fairly recently, in fact.
Oh, cool.
And then also, even more recently, I think there's meant to be a film... Is it Argyle? Which is meant to be...
Oh, yes.
Which is meant to be set in the Kingsman universe.
Is it?
Which is a strange thing to think, because... The original Kingsman, it's all right. I don't think it necessarily warrants a franchise, but there we go.
Oh, well, it's got one.
It's got one.
I mean, maybe it's just other people find it really good and you're just not cool anymore.
That is inherently possible.
You know.
I used to be Indie Ian.
Yes.
The epitome of cool with my long hair playing a kazoo on student radio.
You were always cool.
As I say, the epitome of cool.
In 2019...
Yes.
She was in John Wick 3.
She was, yes.
Which is the only one of her recent films that I've seen.
Likewise, yes.
And she plays someone who's got some killer dogs.
You say killer dogs.
Okay. Genital mutilating dogs.
Genital obsessed dogs.
I remember leaving that film going, wow, how many different ways did they dismember somebody?
And a mere 4 years later, you would get a vasectomy.
In many ways, that was what spurred me on.
The NHS equivalent of Halle Berry setting dogs on your penis.
No, not the penis. That's not where cum is stored.
Testicles, then.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
In any case, Halle Berry's in John Wick 3. And it's a fairly big supporting role.
Yeah.
It's more so than Angelica Houston.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, if we're going to rank supporting roles. And I haven't actually watched John Wick 4 yet.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, I found it very interesting.
Okay, then.
It's kind of. I did a sort of review on the way home in the car.
Right.
Just kind of trying to remember all the thoughts. And my prevailing theory was like, where are the police? But there's no police presence. This is a fictional universe with no police.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. You know. And that actor had died, so it was kind of poignant to forget his name, actually.
Ah, yes. Jerome Flynn.
Yes. Yes. He had died.
I think you're thinking of Lance Reddick.
Yes, that's him. Yeah, so it was kind of quite poignant and very sad.
Come the pandemic era, we have the 2020 sports drama Bruised.
Ow.
Which Halle Berry not only stars in, but directs.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that her first time directing?
I believe so, because I said directorial debut.
Ah, debut. Yes. That was the key word. Mm. I'm very tired.
It's a UFC film.
Oh, cool. Just like Warrior with Tom Hardy.
Sure. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Fine.
And then she's been in two further films that have been... I was about to say that have been released. So she was in the 2022 disaster film Moonfall.
Where the moon falls... And it crumbles.
As directed by that disaster director, Roland Emmerich. In addition to Halle Berry starring, it has Patrick Wilson from Watchmen and the Insidious films.
Yes.
Michael Painter from Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah.
And Donald Sutherland. Because apparently he's still alive.
Yeah, I can do a really good impression of him.
Go on.
Well, howdy-doody-do.
Wow.
We're doing him at some point this year, aren't we?
What, in the Year of Redux?
Isn't he... Oh, no.
No. In that we haven't done a previous episode upon him, then no.
Yeah. Why did I think we were doing him? I can't remember.
No.
Oh, fine.
We haven't even done Kiefer Sutherland yet.
Oh, will we though?
In fact, I think
phone booth.
I think Donald has a better shout than Kiefer.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then this year, she's going to be in an action comedy thriller film called The Union.
Oh.
Which is her opposite Marky Mark Wahlberg.
Oh no.
J.K. Simmons.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Eco. And Jackie O'Haley.
Cool. Oh, I've just seen who the name of the character she's playing. Roxanne! You don't have to put on the red light.
Thanks, Sting.
Put on the red... Oh, Mr. Sting. Yes, Mr. Sting.
Okay, I don't know where you're going with that.
Ah, you've not listened to Alfresco Mints, have you?
Clearly not.
They have a fictional version of Sting...
Right.
Who keeps ringing up the Geordie Heats crime-busting detective agency with like, hello, I'm Mr. Sting, and I've got a problem. Someone, I live in the giant house on the hill. And he keeps playing his lute. Yeah. I'm not going to butcher it any more than I already have.
two other things with regards to her filmography.
Yeah.
You have a film that's currently in post-production called Never Let Go.
Okay.
Which there isn't a lot about, although it is a psychological thriller film as as directed by Alexandra Ajar, who has gained kind of critical acclaim for his remakes of The Hills Have Eyes and Piranha 3D.
Okay.
So he's the guy behind those films. And then she was also in a film called The Mothership that was part of this new phenomenon of making films and then not releasing them.
What? Why?
Now, have you heard of Coyote versus Acme, brother?
It rings a bell.
So Coyote versus Acme is a completed... Warner Brothers film. It's a live action Warner Brothers film in which Wile E. Coyote launches a civil suit against Acme for all of the times he's failed to capture Roadrunner.
That sounds fascinating.
So it's a comedic courtroom drama.
Right.
And what happened is it's principal photography was finished. The effects were, as far as I'm aware, done. Right. And then Warner Brothers decided not only would they not release it, but they would delete all traces of it from existence.
What?
Because of a tax write-off.
What?
So it would be more financially beneficial for them to make the film and then completely remove traces of it existing than it would be to release it and, I don't know, recoup some of the cost on ticket sales.
That's horrible. That's like the producers.
Yes. So basically, this is what film Twitter was about 3-4 months ago.
Right.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
So look up. That's my understanding of it. I recommend looking it up for the full deets.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't an A-list cast. It was like Will Forte of MacGruber and Saturday Night Live fame. But by all means, the general internet consensus is, dude, you know, let's just watch it and make up our own minds. Don't, you know, tease a film and then delete all traces of it. You bastards. So, and it also plays into the larger kind of Netflix narrative, which I suppose surrounds the mothership here, but of, the control of studios as to what to release and what to green light and then cancel to stop paying residuals and things like that. So the modern media landscape, basically.
This makes me so sad. This is like the death of art.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's more profitable to make something and then deny its existence.
Yes.
Rather than...
It's a total shitbag move.
That's awful. Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is meant to be a light-hearted, vaguely comedy podcast.
Well, you know, it's not our decision.
No, but we're commenting on something, and I can't find a way of making it funny apart from saying, what a bunch of c***s again.
There we go. Lovely stuff.
But then that means that the only thing I can do to make it funny is to say an expletive and make you bleep it.
Yeah, but...
So I'm going to rack my brains for 30 seconds of silence.
Okay.
To think of the best possible joke I can make to make something good come out of this horrible situation that doesn't involve swearing.
Okay. Well, I'll talk whilst you're having those moments of silence.
I will have those moments. Just bear in mind, I will not be listening to you at all.
Sure.
So don't ask me to comment.
She's appeared in 3 music videos. She was in the B-52's Meet the Flintstones, because she was obviously in that role. She was in Ghetto Superstar, featuring Praz, by Praz from the Fugees, and Behind Blue Eyes by Limp Bizkit. Did we mention that in the previous Halle Berry episode? I don't think so, so I'll fill the time with that information.
Hey, Ian.
Hmm.
You know those movie executives?
Sure.
They're a bunch of poopy pants.
Right on. Ah,
there we go.
Lovely stuff.
You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Jesus.
I mean, so we've gone through another 3 films of Halle Berry.
Yeah.
And at least one of which you're a big fan of.
Yeah.
The other two, perhaps not so much. But... Having looked at more of her work, what's your kind of feeling about Halle Berry nowadays?
Well, it's interesting in a similar way to the Will Smith question was like, what is his career like now?
Yeah.
Because when we first talked about him, he was like starting a decline and that's kind of continued onwards. With Halle Berry, she's not the kind of big name star that she once was. She's kind of stepped out of the limelight in many ways, maybe coinciding with becoming a mom and kind of deciding that, you know, there are other things that are more important, and that's absolutely right. So this state of the game, it's still worth looking back on her previous films and going, oh yeah, great. But maybe her perception of her has shifted from being kind of sort of beginning to gain a bit of a diva reputation potentially to just being... a kind of cool actress who's now going into producing and directing and stuff. And I apologize, I've just said actress, but I've kind of very recently heard different people talking about how, yes, actors should be like genderless, but people do want to preserve the term actress. So I'm in a bit of a weird phase about, do they want to be called actors, actress? I don't know. So apologies for the slip on that. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think... I mean specifically on the actor point of view.
Well, about her and her.
All right,
her
okay. With regard, very quickly, on the actor point of view, very much down to personal preference. If, you know, the people you're referring to don't mind, then I don't mind either.
I mean, it's mainly Julia Sawala, but, you know.
Okay. So, yeah, with regards to Halle Berry as a whole, again, she's not been as prolific since we last profiled her. That being said, I think she's at the stage of her career because, again, she's an Oscar winner.
Yeah, so Monsters Ball.
She has her pick of projects, so it allows her to be more discerning. And I think, you know, being in a kind of Kingsman sequel and being part of the John Wick franchise, in which she was perfectly good in, from what I remember, it's up to her because, and again, going back to, I don't mean to be shallow, but going back to the fact that she is an innately beautiful woman, she's actually older than you think. She's like, oh, really? Late 50s.
Gosh.
Yeah. Which makes all the sense in the world if you think that she's a young woman in the early 90s and we're coming up to the mid 2020s.
Yeah, yeah.
But her genetics are such that she's just a very attractive woman in middle age. I don't think it's controversial to say late 50s is middle age. So, yeah, I'd have, being that more removed from the more kind of commercial films she was making and, you know, the angling or the perceived angling of where she wanted her career to be at that point, I think you kind of reflect on her filmography as being pretty decent. I mean, it's still one that has Catwoman and Dark Tide and Movie 43 in it, but
true, that's not changed, you know.
But I mean, every major actor has some stinkers here and there,
and they must do, surely.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, I'm someone who very much enjoys the original X-Men franchise. Die Another Day is a bad Bond film, but it's not because of her. You know, she's not actively bringing it down. And, you know, as I say, I enjoyed Boomerang. We've not covered it, but The Flintstones is diverting.
Or, true,
at the very least, as good as a live-action film about the Flintstones is going to be.
Yabba dabba doo.
In the original episode, we talked about Bullworth.
Yeah.
I remember fuck all about Bullworth, but when we...
It was tastefully done.
It wasn't, but... I mean, listening back to us reviewing it, we both got something out of it.
Uh-huh.
Monsters Ball I did not enjoy, but again, it was a brave performance, and that's what she won her Oscar for, to quote Phil Collins. And, you know, there's a lot of mainstream fare over the course of the noughties, and, you know, we, as people listened to earlier, we raved aplenty about Cloud Atlas.
Yeah.
So, you know.
She acquits herself well.
She's a significant actor slash actress.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yes. And she was also Hasty Pudding Theatricals Woman of the Year at some point.
Yes.
So that's good too.
I have heard of that award.
Good. I was like, the idea of something being called Hasty Pudding Theatrical. I like Hasty Puddings.
Lovely. So, any last thoughts on Halle Berry then?
Black don't crack.
Okay. Right. Fine. Okay, in which case, we're going to, before we move off, And on to our next subject. We have had an email.
No.
Yes. don't be so surprised.
Well, based my steaming puddings.
Right. And it's an email from Mr. Christian Honore.
Hooray!
Subject line, holy cat shit, Batman. So, Christian writes, hello, Batian and Pandy, the dad wonder.
I'll take it.
Since I've thrown numerous bad film suggestions at Ha from the start, and since you're about to complete an unofficial trilogy of bad cat films, I decided to actually watch Catwoman in anticipation of your review for Halle Berry Part 2.
Oh.
As one of the most reviled and critically panned films of the last 20 years, I'm not sure I have anything fresh to bring to the discussion. I will say, though, that it's incompetently made by piss off, piss off, oh, Christians doing jokes. And yet,
successfully,
it's a strangely boring film with a weird female empowerment as written by men angle, a stupid supernatural element completely out of keeping with the DC character's history or personality,
but cat gods,
and a Catwoman costume and several scenes, particularly between the female leads, that would be at home in a softcore porno.
That's why I like it so much.
I'll take your word for it. Halle...
I mean, yeah. Don't know what you mean.
Halle Berry didn't exactly cover herself in glory throughout the film, or afterwards, but I defy any actor or actress hired to eat raw tuna from cans or to get aroused by catnip not to emerge from such a film without getting egg on their face.
Ah.
Had the film been made 10 years later, I have no doubt they'd have had her follow a laser pointer as well.
Ha ha.
Wow, do you remember laser pointers?
Yeah, that's still a thing, I think.
Are they?
Yeah.
I could go on about the film's bad villains, a poor man's Roland Daggett married to cosplay Calendar Girl. It's bad romance. Gaga style.
La la la.
Bad CGI. It was still 2004 and even Spider-Man 2 wasn't immune to that. Patient Phillips's bullshit resurrection and prison escape. And its other numerous missteps and shortcomings and assassination of the intellectual property it's adapting. But overall, I'd say it actually deserves its reputation as one of the very worst comic book-based movies, and movies in general, ever made.
Ooh.
Say what you will about Batman and Robin, that at least had more personality and some so-bad-it's-good, tongue-in-cheek, and unironically good moments and elements amidst all the noise and neon. You will notice...
I mean, I need to watch it again.
You will notice from the Catwoman segment that I didn't say that Batman and Robin was underneath Catwoman, because it is not.
Ah, okay.
You have seen Batman and Robin in full, haven't you, brother?
I must have done. I can't have just watched half of it. Because I know
famously you didn't last your very first viewing.
It was too scary for
indeed.
Me.
Indeed. But you reckon you have seen it all the way through?
I must have. I know, yes, I have, because... When me and Kel got married, I made her promise that we'd watch all the Batman films together.
Oh.
And we got as far as Batman and Robin, and then we stopped. And I got really salty. It's like, no, then they start getting good.
So Kelly's not seen the Nolan Batman films?
No. I started reading books for her.
You watched Pay the Ghost.
Yeah.
More on that later. So... anyway, to finish off Christian's email. Enjoying the year of Redux, particularly your coverage of Bright. Alright, sadist. And to finding out if you discovered any diamonds in the rough with regards to this film. Although I wouldn't count on them being there. Cheers. Christian Honoré, the Danish dino drawer.
Yeah.
Which I think accurate. Is a play on the Martian Manhunter. By the way, it's spelled out. Yeah.
I see. Fine. He draws amazingly. He's a very talented artist.
Yes. If you go to the FT forums, there are threads of Christian drawing dinosaurs and Christian drawing Pokemon as well.
Yeah. And he's... I don't know if he got one of his books published. He is trying to publish books or has tried to publish books in the past. But have a look out for Christian Honoré's bookography.
Mm.
That's what it's called, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So that is Halle Berry, done and dusted then. Because we're not, again, you know, that's it now.
Well, you're not doing it for round three.
We're not doing a round three, but, you know...
In 2034.
If we come across a film that has Halle Berry in it for another featured actor, we're not going to say, no, we've done enough. That's enough.
That's enough.
So, you know.
Like an egg.
We can still potentially do the Flintstones for, I don't know, John Goodman month. That has John actually Goodman been month. Nominated.
I'd be up for that.
So, there we go.
Or Rick Moranis Mark II.
Rick Moranis could be part of the Year of Redux. Less options for him, obviously. But speaking of the Year of Redux, we're on to our next subject. And as you know, our next subject will be Miss Amy Adams.
A.A.
Yes. So, in the previous episode, I believe from year one, Pandy says nothing, he doesn't know. It was episode 7 from year 1.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah. I was just testing you.
So, year 1, we covered The Fighter.
Yep.
We covered Junebug.
Yep.
And we covered Enchanted.
Yeah. How does she know that you love her?
And this time around, so again, we've kind of decided we're going to do all of them in chronological order.
Yeah.
So, Pandy's introducing the next episode. So we're starting off with the film earliest in her career. And that is to say, her very first film.
Mm.
So Will Ackerman suggested, how about Cruel Intentions 2? And I thought, no. For one thing, we haven't covered Cruel Intentions 1. And
true. I have seen Cruel Intentions too.
Ah, right. Well,
it's got more boobs in it than the first one.
We can talk about that next episode.
Sure.
But we're doing one of my favourite films ever, Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Hooray!
Of which she is prominently in the supporting cast. Is that part of our normal rules? No. But it's the Year of Redux. So I'm shoehorning it in.
Yeah.
Because my evil is law. And
all right, Aku.
Thank you. And we continue to a film.
Pete Tong. We continue.
But has previously been covered in Comic Relief. But again, that's not unusual for the Year of Redux. We're looking at her initial turn as the prominent comic book character Lois Lane in Man of Steel.
Yeah, boy.
And that is sure to promote discussion because people have unkind things to say about Zack Snyder, many of which are deserved. But I think Man of Steel is probably the one that is where the hatred is the least deserved. But that is something we can discuss at a later date. And certainly a discussion you and I have not had together.
We have not, and I don't feel qualified to have it yet, because I've seen those films like once each.
Right.
So it'll be interesting
you
to...
You have seen Drop Dead Gorgeous before?
No. Oh, I mean, right, like the Lois Lane films.
The DCEU.
Yeah.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're finishing off with a film that we were kind of gunning for anyway, but the forums very much helped us lock in as a decision. We are covering, and this is Man of Steel related, because it reunites Amy Adams with General Zod, Michael Shannon, and it's the film Arrival.
Yeah.
Which again deals with aliens. So
I remember talking about Arrival on an episode of List and Shout, including the orgs, and it was mentioned there, and they did a very good job of not spoiling the film. But it made I've been very interested to watch it, and now I finally am being forced into it by my own podcast.
Hang on, sci-fi, orgs, email feedback, hey@earthdex2.net.
Absolutely, it's 2024, baby.
There we go.
Time to dust off those keyboards?
Yeah, it's been a while. That's all I'm saying.
Pull your finger out, Orgs, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, after all those times we emailed for Borgcast.
Yeah. Honestly. We've always been there for
you. Yeah, exactly. It's meant to be a two-way street. Anyway. So, it's Drop Dead Gorgeous.
That is completely unfair.
I know it is. Drop Dead Gorgeous. That's the joke. Drop Dead Gorgeous, Man of Steel, and Arrival that will be covered on the next episode of Hey and Actor. So, if you've got thoughts on any of those films, or indeed any other film that Amy Adams has been in, then drop us a line at hey@earth-2.net.
Yes.
And you can also get in contact with us via our Facebook page as well.
Please do. We're always happy to help.
We sure are. So, one more thing to do before we say our goodbyes, brother.
Is that you, Columbo?
just like one more Cerveza Cristal. Thanks, Columbo, you shill. The subject of our next the episode afterwards, brother.
Yes.
Now, you know, we don't want to just do people that were covered in years one and two. But also want to do people who were in later years as well. That being said, this guy was the guy directly before Halle Berry in year two.
Hell yeah.
Now, that being said, it led to some of our greatest jokes.
Yes.
Involving Rod, Jane and Freddy.
Yes.
And it's a guy we can cross-promote with another Earth 2 podcast.
Indeed. Go on, rip the bandage off. Tell us who it is.
It is Francis Ford Coppola's monster himself, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Three more bites at the cage cherry. And, yes.
I mean, let's put it this way. He's got quite the filmography second time round.
Yeah. I know Stavros from Salty that we didn't pick a certain film, last time around.
Not the base.
So I'm going to nominate that one, in homage to him.
Okay.
But I'll very much leave the other two choices up to you, brother, and the forums. So again, we'll put out a forum thread, and we'll see what people are interested in doing.
Hell yeah.
Lovely, lovely. So then, until next episode with regards to Amy Adams, go and check out all of our sponsors.
Yeah, do. Yeah. Make sure you use that promo code.
Absolutely, from our website.
From our website.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right, the Hey Innit Actor website.
Quite right. Yeah.
Not the Facebook page.
No,
we're not going to promote anything on the Facebook page. It's strictly go to our website.
That is sacred.
You know.
We can't be besmirching our wonderful face. Yeah. have a wonderful April.
Yes.
And we'll see you very soon for more Hey and Actor.
Huzzah!
That's our catchphrase. See you another, hey! and don't forget, ooh, actors, don't you love them? Whoopie whoopie boo. And from both of us, it's a big old, an actor! shut up.
Yeah, go to sleep.
Back in my box.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
better, prettier than Hanny and thicker than Janet. She say she like all of my club hangers, I be jamming. Told her to bust it, but let me see what's really happening. She the ship and I'm the captain. I'm the captain, who the bigger than the big ocean that make me happy. And I'm all the way in your city, I'm from Louisiana, so you gotta show me how your city do it for the camera. Make it drop and bring it back to the top. I'm no amateur, girl, you could give it to me. It ain't nothing I can't handle. She just got out the shower, smelling like a scented candle. And I'm finna pin up backwards, I was sliding off the mattress. No moving, no acting, baby, this real action. So bad, you be scared to walk past me. I know you Halle Berry, baby, there's no acting. I think so bad, you be scared to walk past me, for real.
She fine in the
listen to you, GK. I'm finna dip her through the traffic with the top off of the dump. Girl, I guarantee I can make you go numb, 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 numb. I got enough bread to take me and you to London and back to America and all over the country. She make me wanna keep her close by like a sidekick. She the type of chick that ain't gon' never look sloppy. I'm beating out the frame, hurricane, that's who I be. You must be Halle Berry, I don't need to see your ID.
I didn't want to delay the recording.
Oh, yeah.
topicality.
It's still meme worthy. Oh, delicious Cerveza Cristal.
Yes, to wash down with your Omaha steak.
Quite.
Lovely stuff. So, anything more to say about Boomerang?
No.
No. Okay, then. In which case, we will move on from relative triumph. It's a mixed response from the brothers Wilson or Edinburgh Wilson. But we'll now move on to something that's surely a red hot triumph.
I don't know what's coming for the, next, the next two files.
Yeah. Shush now.
Sorry.
Don't give away things. The next thing to come, brother, is Catwoman.
Oh, good. Something that makes sense.
Yes.
Your delivery is delicious.
You know how Dropboxes are physical.
These are our steaks.
Yeah. You still recording?
I'm going to stop.
Oh, okay.